Chapter 5 Showdown and Shootout 1 In a blues tune from the 20s, Billie Holiday, who would one day discover the truth for herself, sang, Doctor told me, daughter, you got to quit it fast, because one more rocket gonna be your last. Henry Dean's last rocket went up just 5 minutes before the van pulled up in front of the Leaning Tower, and his brother was herded inside. Because he was on Henry's right, George Biondi, known to his friends as Big George and to his enemies as Big Nose, asked Henry's questions. Now, as Henry sat nodding and blinking owlishly over the board, Trix Postino put the die in a hand which had already gone the dusty color that results in the extremities after long-term heroin addiction, the dusty color which is the precursor of gangrene. "Your turn, Henry," Trix said. And Henry let the die fall from his hand. When he went on staring into space and showed no intention of moving his game piece, Jimmy Haspio moved it for him.
Look at this, Henry, he said. You got a chance to score a piece of the pie.
Reese's Pieces, Henry said dreamily, and then looked around as if awakening. Where's Eddie? He'll be here pretty soon, Trix soothed him. Just play the game.
How about a fix?
Play the game, Henry.
Okay, stop leaning on me.
Don't lean on him, Kevin Blake said to Jimmy.
Okay, I won't, Jimmy said.
You ready? George Biondi said, and gave the others an enormous wink as Henry's chin floated down to his breastbone and then slowly rose once more. It was like watching a soaked log not quite ready to give in and sink for good.
Yeah, Henry said, bring it on.
Bring it on, Jimmy Haspio cried happily.
You bring that fucker,
Trix agreed, and they all roared with laughter. In the other room, Balazar's edifice, now 3 levels high, trembled again, but did not fall.
Okay, listen close, George said, and winked again.
Although Henry was on a sports category, George announced the category was arts and entertainment.
What popular country and western singer had hits with A Boy Named Sue, Folsom Prison Blues, and numerous other shit-kicking songs?
Kevin Blake, who actually could add 7 and 9 if you gave him poker chips to do it with, howled with laughter, clutching his knees and nearly upsetting the board. Still pretending to scan the card in his hand, George continued.
This popular singer is also known as the Man in Black. His first name means the same as a place you go to take a piss, and his last name means what you got in your wallet, unless you're a fucking needle freak.
There was a long, expectant silence.
Walter Brennan.
Henry said at last. Bellows of laughter. Jimmy Haspio clutched Kevin Blake. Kevin punched Jimmy in the shoulder repeatedly. In Balazar's office, the house of cards, which was now becoming a tower of cards, trembled again.
Quiet down, Jimmy yelled. The boss is building.
They quieted at once.
Right, George said. You got that one right, Henry. It was a toughie, but you came through. Always do, Henry said. Always come through in the fucking clutch. How about a fix?
Good idea, George said, and took a Roy Tan cigar box from behind him. From it he produced a hypo. He stuck it into the scarred vein above Henry's elbow, and Henry's last rocket took off. 2. The pizza van's exterior was grungy, but underneath the road filth and spray paint was a high-tech marvel the DEA guys would have envied. As Balazar had said on more than one occasion, you couldn't beat the bastards unless you could compete with the bastards, unless you could match their equipment. It was expensive stuff, but Balazar's side had an advantage. They stole what the DEA had to buy at grossly inflated prices. There were electronics company employees all the way down the eastern seaboard willing to sell you top-secret stuff at bargain basement prices. These Cazzaroni, Jack Andolini called them Silicon Valley cokeheads, practically threw the stuff at you. Under the dash was a fuzzbuster, a UHF police radar jammer, a high-range, high-frequency radio transmissions detector, an HRHF jammer, a transponder amplifier that would make anyone trying to track the van by standard triangulation methods decide it was simultaneously in Connecticut, Harlem, and Montauk Sound, a radio telephone, and a small red button, which Andolini pushed as soon as Eddie Dean got out of the van. In Balazar's office, the intercom uttered a single short buzz.
"That's them," he said. "Claudio, let him in. Jimmy, you tell everyone to dummy up. So far as Eddie Dean knows, no one's with me but you and Claudio. Jimmy, go in the storeroom with the other gentlemen."
They went, Jimmy turning left, Claudio Andolini going right. Calmly, Balazar started on another level of his edifice.
3. "Just let me handle it," Eddie said again as Claudio opened the door.
"Yes," the gunslinger said, but remained alert, ready to come forward the instant it seemed necessary. Keys rattled. The gunslinger was very aware of odors, old sweat from Carl Vincent on his right, some sharp, almost acerbic aftershave from Jack Andolini on his left, and as they stepped into the dimness, the sour tang of beer. The smell of beer was all he recognized. This was no tumble-down saloon with sawdust on the floor and planks set across sawhorses for a bar. It was as far from a place like Sheb's and Tull as you could get, the gunslinger reckoned. Glass gleamed mellowly everywhere, more glass in this one room than he had seen in all the years since his childhood, when supply lines had begun to break down, partially because of interdicting raids carried out by the rebel forces of Farson, the good man, but mostly, he thought, simply because the world was moving on. Farson had been a symptom of that great movement, not the cause. He saw their reflections everywhere, on the walls, on the glass-faced bar, and the long mirror behind it. He could even see them reflected as curved miniatures in the graceful bell shapes of wine glasses hung upside down above the bar, glasses as gorgeous and fragile as festival ornaments. In one corner was a sculpted creation of lights that rose and changed, rose and changed, rose and changed. Gold to green, green to yellow, yellow to red, red to gold again. Written across it in great letters was a word he could read, but which meant nothing to him. Rockola. Never mind. There was business to be done here. He was no tourist. He must not allow himself the luxury of behaving like one, no matter how wonderful or strange these things might be. The man who had let them in was clearly the brother of the man who drove what Eddie called the van, as in Vanguard, Roland supposed, although he was much taller and perhaps 5 years younger. He wore a gun and a shoulder rig.
"Where's Henry?" Eddie asked. "I want to see Henry."
He raised his voice.
"Henry! Hey, Henry!"
No reply, only silence in which the glasses hung over the bar seemed to shiver with a delicacy that was just beyond the range of a human ear.
"Mr. Balazar would like to speak to you first." "You got him gagged and tied up somewhere, don't you?"
Eddie asked. And before Claudio could do more than open his mouth to reply, Eddie laughed.
"No, what am I thinking about? You got him stoned, that's all. Why would you bother with ropes and gags when all you have to do to keep Henry quiet is needle him? Okay, take me to Balazar. Let's get this over with."
4. The gunslinger looked at the tower of cards on Balazar's desk and thought, another sign. Balazar did not look up. The tower of cards had grown too tall for that to be necessary, but rather over the top. His expression was one of pleasure and warmth.
"Eddie," he said, "I'm glad to see you, son. I heard you had some trouble at Kennedy."
"I ain't your son," Eddie said flatly. Balazar made a little gesture that was at the same time comic, sad, and untrustworthy.
"You hurt me, Eddie," it said. "You hurt me when you say a thing like that."
"Let's cut through it," Eddie said. "You know, it comes down to one thing or the other. Either the feds are running me, or they had to let me go. You know they didn't sweat it out of me in just 2 hours. And you know if they had, I'd be down at 43rd Street, answering questions between an occasional break to puke in the basin."
"Are they running you, Eddie?" Balazar asked mildly.
"No, they had to let me go. They're following, but I'm not leading."
"So you ditch the stuff," Balazar said. "That's fascinating. You must tell me how one ditches 2 pounds of coke when one is on a jet plane. It would be handy information to have. It's like a locked room mystery story."
"I didn't ditch it," Eddie said. "But I don't have it anymore either."
"So who does?"
Claudio asked, then blushed when his brother looked at him with dour ferocity.
"He does," Eddie said, smiling, and pointed at Enrico Balazar over the tower of cards. "It's already been delivered."
For the first time since Eddie had been escorted into the office, a genuine expression illuminated Balazar's face. Surprise. Then it was gone. He smiled politely. "Yes," he said. "To a location which will be revealed later, after you have your brother and your goods and are gone. To Iceland, maybe. Is that how it's supposed to go?"
"No," Eddie said. "You don't understand. It's here. Delivery, right to your door, just like we agreed. Because even in this day and age, there are some people who still believe in living up to the deal as it was originally cut. Amazing, I know, but true."
They were all staring at him.
"How am I doing, Roland?" Eddie asked.
"I think you are doing very well. But don't let this man Balazar get his balance, Eddie. I think he's dangerous."
"You think so, huh? Well, I'm one up on you there, my friend. I know he's dangerous. Very fucking dangerous."
He looked at Balazar again and dropped him a little wink.
"That's why you're the one who's got to be concerned with the feds now, not me. If they turn up with a search warrant, you could suddenly find yourself fucked without even opening your legs, Mr. Balazar."
Balazar had picked up two cards. His hands suddenly shook, and he put them aside. It was minute, but Roland saw it, and Eddie saw it too. An expression of uncertainty, even momentary fear, perhaps, appeared and then disappeared on his face.
"Watch your mouth with me, Eddie. Watch how you express yourself, and please remember that my time and my tolerance for nonsense are both short."
Jack Andolini looked alarmed.
"He made a deal with them, Mr. Balazar. This little shit turned over the coke and they planted it while they were pretending to question him."
"No one has been in here," Balazar said. "No one could get close, Jack, and you know it. Beepers go when a pigeon farts on the roof. But even if they had managed to set us up somehow, we have so many people in their organization we could drill 15 holes in their case in 3 days. We'd know who, when, and how." Balazar looked back at Eddie.
"Eddie," he said, "you have 15 seconds to stop bullshitting. Then I'm going to have Chimi Dredo step in here and hurt you. Then after he hurts you for a while, he will leave, and from a room close by you will hear him hurting your brother."
Eddie stiffened.
"Easy," the gunslinger murmured, and thought all you have to do to hurt him is to say his brother's name. It's like poking an open sore with a stick.
"I'm going to walk into your bathroom," Eddie said.
He pointed at a door in the far left corner of the room, a door so unobtrusive it could almost have been one of the wall panels.
"I'm going in by myself. Then I'm going to walk back out with a pound of your cocaine, half the shipment. You test it, then you bring Henry in here where I can look at him. When I see him, see he's okay, you are going to give him our goods, and he's going to ride home with one of your gentlemen. While he does, me and
Roland," he almost said,
"me and the rest of the guys we both know you got here can watch you build that thing. When Henry's home and safe, which means no one standing there with a gun in his ear, he's going to call and say a certain word. This is something we worked out before I left, just in case."
The gunslinger checked Eddie's mind to see if this was true or bluff. It was true, or at least Eddie thought it was. Roland saw Eddie really believed his brother Henry would die before saying that word in falsity. The gunslinger was not so sure.
"You must think I still believe in Santa Claus," Balazar said.
"I know you don't."
"Claudio, search him. Jack, you go in my bathroom and search it, everything."
"Is there any place in there I wouldn't know about?" Andolini asked.
Balazar paused for a long moment, considering Andolini carefully with his dark brown eyes.
"There is a small panel on the back wall of the medicine cabinet," he said. "I keep a few personal things in there. It is not big enough to hide a pound of dope in, but maybe you better check it."
Jack left, and as he entered the little privy, the gunslinger saw a flash of the same frozen white light that had illuminated the privy of the air carriage. Then the door shut. Balazar's eyes flicked back to Eddie.
"Why do you want to tell such crazy lies?" he asked, almost sorrowfully. "I thought you were smart."
"Look in my face," Eddie said quietly, "and tell me that I am lying."
Balazar did as Eddie asked. He looked for a long time. Then he turned away, hands stuffed in his pocket so deeply that the crack of his peasant's ass showed a little. His posture was one of sorrow over an erring son. But before he turned, Roland had seen an expression on Balazar's face that had not been sorrow. What Balazar had seen in Eddie's face had left him not sorrowful, but profoundly disturbed.
"Strip," Claudio said, and now he was holding his gun on Eddie.
Eddie started to take his clothes off. 5.
"I don't like this," Balazar thought as he waited for Jack Andolini to come back out of the bathroom.
He was scared, suddenly sweating, not just under his arms or in his crotch, places where he sweated even when it was the dead of winter and colder than a well-digger's belt buckle, but all over. Eddie had gone off looking like a junkie, a smart junkie, but still a junkie, someone who could be led anywhere by the skag fishhook in his balls, and come back looking like...
like what?
Like he'd grown in some way, changed. It's like somebody poured 2 quarts of fresh guts down his throat.
Yes, that was it.
And the dope. The fucking dope. Jack was tossing the bathroom, and Claudio was checking Eddie with the thorough ferocity of a sadistic prison guard. Eddie had stood with a stolidity Balazar would not previously have believed possible for him or any other doper, while Claudio spat 4 times into his left palm, rubbed the snot-flecked spittle all over his right hand, then rammed it up Eddie's asshole to the wrist and an inch or two beyond. There was no dope in his bathroom, no dope on Eddie or in him. There was no dope in Eddie's clothes, his jacket, or his traveling bag. So it was all nothing but a bluff. "Look in my face and tell me that I am lying." So he had. What he saw was upsetting. What he saw was that Eddie Dean was perfectly confident. He intended to go into the bathroom and come back with half of Balazar's goods. Balazar almost believed it himself. Claudio Andolini pulled his arm back. His fingers came out of Eddie Dean's asshole with a plopping sound. Claudio's mouth twisted like a fish line with knots in it.
"Hurry up, Jack, I got this junky shit on my hand!" Claudio yelled angrily.
"If I'd known you were going to be prospecting up there, Claudio, I would have wiped my ass with a chair leg last time I took a dump," Eddie said mildly. "Your hand would have come out cleaner, and I wouldn't be standing here feeling like I just got raped by Ferdinand the Bull."
"Jack!"
"Go on down to the kitchen and clean yourself up," Balazar said quietly. "Eddie and I have got no reason to hurt each other, do we, Eddie?"
"No,"
Eddie said.
"He's clean anyway," Claudio said.
"Well, clean ain't the word. What I mean is he ain't holding. You can be goddamn sure of that." He walked out, holding his dirty hand in front of him like a dead fish. Eddie looked calmly at Balazar, who was thinking again of Harry Houdini and Blackstone and Doug Henning and David Copperfield. They kept saying that magic acts were as dead as vaudeville. But Henning was a superstar, and the Copperfield kid had blown the crowd away the one time Balazar had caught his act in Atlantic City. Balazar had loved magicians from the first time he had seen one on a street corner doing card tricks for pocket change. And what was the first thing they always did before making something appear? Something that would make the whole audience first gasp and then applaud? What they did was invite someone up from the audience to make sure that the place from which the rabbit or dove or bare-breasted cutie or the whatever was to appear was perfectly empty. More than that, to make sure there was no way to get anything inside.
"I think maybe he's done it. I don't know how, and I don't care. The only thing I know for sure is that I don't like any of this. Not one damn bit."
6. George Biondi also had something not to like. He doubted if Eddie Dean was going to be wild about it either. George was pretty sure that at some point after Chimi had come into the accountant's office and doused the lights, Henry had died. Died quietly, with no muss, no fuss, no bother. Had simply floated away like a dandelion spore on a light breeze. George thought maybe it had happened right around the time Claudio left to wash his shitty hand in the kitchen.
"Henry?" George muttered in Henry's ear. He put his mouth so close that it was like kissing a girl's ear in a movie theater, and that was pretty fucking gross, especially when you consider that the guy was probably dead. It was like narcophobia, or whatever the fuck they called it. But he had to know, and the wall between this office and Balazar's was thin.
"What's wrong, George?" Trix Postino asked.
"Shut up," Chimi said.
His voice was the low rumble of an idling truck. They shut up. George slid a hand inside Henry's shirt. Oh, this was getting worse and worse. That image of being with a girl in a movie theater wouldn't leave him. Now here he was feeling her up. Only it wasn't a her, but a him. This wasn't just narcophobia, it was fucking faggot narcophobia. And Henry's scrawny, junky chest wasn't moving up and down. And there wasn't anything inside going thump, thump, thump. For Henry Dean, it was all over. For Henry Dean, the ball game had been rained out in the seventh inning. Wasn't nothing ticking but his watch. He moved into the heavy, old-country atmosphere of olive oil and garlic that surrounded Chimidretto. "I think we might have a problem," George whispered. 7. Jack came out of the bathroom.
"There's no dope in there," he said, and his flat eyes studied Eddie. "And if you were thinking about the window, you can forget it. That's 10-gauge steel mesh."
"I wasn't thinking about the window, and it is in there," Eddie said quietly. "You just don't know where to look."
"I'm sorry, Mr. Balazar," Andolini said, "but this crock is getting just a little too full for me."
Balazar studied Eddie as if he hadn't even heard Andolini. He was thinking very deeply. Thinking about magicians pulling rabbits out of hats. You got a guy from the audience to check out the fact that the hat was empty. What other thing that never changed? That no one saw into the hat but the magician, of course. And what did the kid said? "I'm going to walk into your bathroom. I'm going in by myself." Knowing how a magic trick worked was something he usually wouldn't want to know. Knowing spoiled the fun. Usually. This, however, was a trick he couldn't wait to spoil. "Fine," he said to Eddie. "If it's in there, go get it. Just like you are, bare ass." "Good," Eddie said, and started toward the bathroom door. "But not alone," Balazar said. Eddie stopped at once, his body stiffening as if Balazar had shot him with an invisible harpoon, and it did Balazar's heart good to see it. For the first time, something hadn't gone according to the kid's plan. "Jack's going with you."
"No," Eddie said at once.
"That's not what I..." "Eddie," Balazar said gently, "you don't tell me no. That's one thing you never do." 8.
"It's all right," the gunslinger said. "Let him come."
But Eddie was close to gibbering, barely holding onto his control. It wasn't just the sudden curveball Balazar had thrown him. It was his gnawing worry over Henry and, growing steadily ascendant over all else, his need for a fix.
"Let him come. It will be all right. Listen."
Eddie listened. 9. Balazar watched him, a slim, naked man, with only the first suggestion of the junkie's typical cave-chested slouch, his head cocked to one side. And as he watched, Balazar felt some of his confidence evaporate. It was as if the kid was listening to a voice only he could hear. The same thought passed through Andolini's mind, but in a different way. "What's this? It looks like the dog on those old RCA Victor records." Call had wanted to tell him something about Eddie's eyes. Suddenly Jack Andolini wished he had listened.
"Wish in one hand, shit in the other," he thought.
If Eddie had been listening to voices inside his head, they had either quit talking or he had quit paying attention. "Okay," he said. "Come along, Jack. I'll show you the eighth wonder of the world." He flashed a smile that neither Jack Andolini or Enrico Balazar cared for in the slightest.
"Is that so?"
Andolini pulled a gun from the clamshell holster attached to his belt at the small of his back.
"Am I gonna be amazed?"
Eddie's smile widened. "Oh, yeah. I think this is gonna knock your socks off." 10. Andolini followed Eddie into the bathroom. He was holding the gun up because his wind was up. "Close the door," Eddie said.
"Fuck you," Andolini answered.
"Close the door or no dope," Eddie said.
"Fuck you," Andolini said again.
Now, a little scared, feeling that there was something going on that he didn't understand, Andolini looked brighter than he had in the van.
He won't close the door, Eddie yelled at Balazar. I'm getting ready to give up on you, Mr. Balazar. You probably got 6 wise guys in this place, every one of them with about 4 guns, and the 2 of you are going batshit over a kid and a crapper, a junkie kid.
Shut the fucking door, Jack, Balazar shouted.
That's right, Eddie said as Jack Andolini kicked the door shut behind him. Is you a man or is you a mouse?
Oh, boy, ain't I had enough of this turd,
Andolini said to no one in particular. He raised the gun butt forward, meaning to pistol whip Eddie across the mouth. Then he froze, gun drawn up across his body, the snarl that bared his teeth slackening into a slack-jawed gape of surprise as he saw what Carl Vincent had seen in the van. Eddie's eyes changed from brown to blue. Now grab him, a low, commanding voice said, and although the voice came from Eddie's mouth, it was not Eddie's voice.
Schizo, Jack Andolini thought. He's gone schizo, gone fucking schi...
But the thought broke off when Eddie's hands grabbed his shoulders, because when that happened, Andolini saw a hole in reality suddenly appear about 3 feet behind Eddie. No... Not a hole. Its dimensions were too perfect for that. It was a door.
Hail Mary, full of grace, Jack said in a low, breathy moan.
Through that doorway, which hung in space a foot or so above the floor in front of Balazar's private shower, he could see a dark beach which sloped down to crashing waves. Things were moving on that beach. Things... He brought the gun down, but the blow which had been meant to break off all of Eddie's front teeth at the gum line did no more than mash Eddie's lips back and bloody them a little. All the strength was running out of him. Jack could feel it happening. I told you it was going to knock your socks off, Jack, Eddie said, and then yanked him. Jack realized what Eddie meant to do at the last moment and began to fight like a wildcat, but it was too late. They were tumbling backward through that doorway, and the droning hum of New York City at night, so familiar and constant you never even heard it unless it wasn't there anymore, was replaced by the grinding sound of the waves and the grating, questioning voices of the dimly seen horrors crawling to and fro on the beach.
11. We'll have to move very fast, or we'll find ourselves basted in a hot oast, Roland had said. And Eddie was pretty sure the guy meant that if they didn't shuck and jive at damn near the speed of light, their gooses were going to be cooked. He believed it, too. When it came to hard guys, Jack Andolini was like Dwight Gooden. You could rock him, yes, you could shock him, maybe, but if you let him get away in the early innings, he was going to stomp you flat later on.
"Left hand!" Roland screamed at himself as they went through, and he separated from Eddie. "Remember! Left hand! Left hand!"
He saw Eddie and Jack stumble backward, fall, and then go rolling down the rocky scree that edged the beach, struggling for the gun in Andolini's hand. Roland had just time to think what a cosmic joke it would be if he arrived back in his own world, only to discover that his physical body had died while he had been away, and then it was too late to wonder, too late to go back.
12.
Andolini didn't know what had happened. Part of him was sure he had gone crazy. Part was sure Eddie had doped him or gassed him or something like that. Part believed that the vengeful god of his childhood had finally tired of his evils and had plucked him away from the world he knew and set him down in this weird purgatory. Then he saw the door, standing open, spilling a fan of white light, the light from Balazar's John, onto the rocky ground, and understood it was possible to get back. Andolini was a practical man above all else. He would worry about what all this meant later on. Right now he intended to kill this creep's ass and get back through that door. The strength that had gone out of him in his shocked surprise now flooded back. He realized Eddie was trying to pull his small but very efficient Colt Cobra out of his hand and had nearly succeeded. Jack pulled it back with a curse, tried to aim, and Eddie promptly grabbed his arm again. Andolini hoisted a knee into the big muscle of Eddie's right thigh. The expensive gabardine of Andolini's slacks was now crusted with dirty gray beach sand, and Eddie screamed as the muscle seized up.
"Roland!" he cried. "Help me! For Christ's sake, help me!"
Andolini snapped his head around, and what he saw threw him off balance again. There was a guy standing there.
Only he looked more like a ghost than a guy. Not exactly Casper the Friendly Ghost, either. The swaying figure's white, haggard face was rough with beard stubble. His shirt was in tatters, which blew back behind him in twisted ribbons, showing the starved stack of his ribs. A filthy rag was wrapped around his right hand. He looked sick, sick and dying. But even so, he also looked tough enough to make Andolini feel like a soft-boiled egg. And the Joker was wearing a pair of guns. They looked older than the hills, old enough to have come from a Wild West museum. But they were guns just the same. They might even really work. And Andolini suddenly realized he was going to have to take care of the white-faced man right away. Unless he really was a spook. And if that was the case, it wouldn't matter fuck all, so there was really no sense worrying about it. Andolini let go of Eddie and snap-rolled to the right, barely feeling the edge of rock that tore open his $500 sport jacket. At the same instant, the gunslinger drew left-handed, and his draw was as it had always been, sick or well, wide awake or still half asleep, faster than a streak of blue summer lightning. "I'm beat," Andolini thought, full of sick wonder. "Christ, he's faster than anybody I ever saw. I'm beat. Holy Mary, Mother of God, he's going to blow me away. He's go—" The man in the ragged shirt pulled the trigger of the revolver in his left hand, and Jack Andolini thought, really thought, he was dead before he realized there had been only a dull click instead of a report. Misfire. Smiling, Andolini rose to his knees and raised his own gun.
"I don't know who you are, but you can kiss your ass goodbye, you fucking spook," he said.
13. Eddie sat up, shivering, his naked body pocked with goosebumps. He saw Roland draw, heard the dry snap that should have been a bang, saw Andolini come up on his knees, heard him say something, and before he really knew what he was doing, his hand had found a ragged chunk of rock. He pulled it out of the grainy earth and threw it as hard as he could. It struck Andolini high on the back of the head and bounced away. Blood sprayed from a ragged, hanging flap in Jack Andolini's scalp. Andolini fired, but the bullet that surely would have killed the gunslinger otherwise went wild. 14. Not really wild, the gunslinger could have told Eddie. When you feel the wind of the slug on your cheek, you can't really call it wild. He thumbed the hammer of his gun back and pulled the trigger again as he recoiled from Andolini's shot. This time the bullet in the chamber fired. The dry, authoritative crack echoed up and down the beach. Gulls asleep on rocks high above the lobstrosities awoke and flew upward in screaming, startled packs. The gunslinger's bullet would have stopped Andolini for good, in spite of his own involuntary recoil, but by then Andolini was also in motion, falling sideways, dazed by the blow on the head. The crack of the gunslinger's revolver seemed distant, but the searing poker it plunged into his left arm, shattering the elbow, was real enough. It brought him out of his daze, and he rose to his feet, one arm hanging broken and useless, the gun wavering wildly about in his other hand, looking for a target. It was Eddie he saw first, Eddie the junkie, Eddie who had somehow brought him to this crazy place. Eddie was standing there, as naked as the day he had been born, shivering in the chilly wind, clutching himself with both arms. Well, he might die here, but he would at least have the pleasure of taking Eddie fucking Dean with him. Andolini brought his gun up. The little cobra now seemed to weigh about 20 pounds, but he managed. 15. This better not be another misfire, Roland thought grimly, and thumbed the hammer back again. Below the din of the gulls, he heard the smooth, oiled click as the chamber revolved. 16. It was no misfire. 17. The gunslinger hadn't aimed at Andolini's head, but at the gun in Andolini's hand. He didn't know if they still needed this man, but they might. He was important to Balazar, and because Balazar had proved to be every bit as dangerous as Roland had thought he might be, the best course was the safest one. His shot was good, and that was no surprise. What happened to Andolini's gun, and hence to Andolini, was. Roland had seen it happen, but only twice in all the years he had seen men fire guns at each other. "Bad luck for you, fellow," the gunslinger thought, as Andolini wandered off toward the beach, screaming. Blood poured down his shirt and pants. The hand which had been holding the Colt Cobra was missing below the middle of the palm. The gun was a senseless piece of twisted metal lying on the sand. Eddie stared at him, stunned. No one would ever misjudge Jack Andolini's caveman face again, because now he had no face. Where it had been, there was now nothing but a churned mess of raw flesh and the black, screaming hole of his mouth.
My God, what happened?
My bullet must have struck the cylinder of his gun at the second he pulled the trigger, the gunslinger said. He spoke as dryly as a professor giving a police academy ballistics lecture. The result was an explosion that tore the back off his gun. I think one or two of the other cartridges may have exploded as well.
Shoot him, Eddie said.
He was shivering harder than ever, and now it wasn't just the combination of night air, sea breeze, and naked body that was causing it.
Kill him! Put him out of his misery, for God's sake!
Too late, the gunslinger said, with a cold indifference that chilled Eddie's flesh all the way into the bone. And Eddie turned away just too late to avoid seeing the lobstrosity swarm over Andolini's feet, tearing off his Gucci loafers, with the feet still inside them, of course. Screaming, waving his arms spasmodically before him, Andolini fell forward. The lobstrosities swarmed greedily over him, questioning him anxiously all the while they were eating him alive.
Dadachek, didachik, dumachum, dadachok.
Jesus, Eddie moaned. What do we do now?
Now you get exactly as much of the devil powder, the gunslinger said, cocaine, Eddie heard, as you promised the man Balazar. Roland said. No more and no less, and we go back. He looked levelly at Eddie. Only this time I have to go back with you, as myself.
Jesus Christ, Eddie said, can you do that?
And at once answered his own question.
Sure you can, but why?
Because you can't handle this alone, Roland said. Come here. Eddie looked back at the squirming hump of clawed creatures on the beach. He had never liked Jack Andolini, but he felt his stomach roll over just the same.
"Come here," Roland said impatiently. "We've little time, and I have little liking for what I must do now. It's something I've never done before, never thought I would do." His lips twisted bitterly. "I'm getting used to doing things like that."
Eddie approached the scrawny figure slowly, on legs that felt more and more like rubber. His bare skin was white and glimmering in the alien dark.
"Just who are you, Roland?" he thought. "What are you? And that heat I feel baking off you, is it just fever or some kind of madness? I think it might be both." God, he needed a fix. More, he deserved a fix. "Never done what before?" he asked. "What are you talking about?"
"Take this," Roland said, and gestured at the ancient revolver slung low on his right hip. Did not point, there was no finger to point with, only a bulky, rag-wrapped bundle. "It's no good to me. Not now, perhaps never again." Eddie swallowed.
"I don't want to touch it."
"I don't want you to either," the gunslinger said with curious gentleness. "But I'm afraid neither of us has a choice. There's going to be shooting."
"There is?"
"Yes." The gunslinger looked serenely at Eddie. "Quite a lot of it, I think." 18. Balazar had become more and more uneasy. Too long. They had been in there too long, and it was too quiet. Distantly, maybe on the next block, he could hear people shouting at each other, and then a couple of rattling reports that were probably firecrackers. But when you were in the sort of business Balazar was in, firecrackers weren't the first thing you thought of. A scream? Was that a scream? Never mind. Whatever's happening on the next block has nothing to do with you. You're turning into an old woman. All the same, the signs were bad, very bad. "Jack?" he yelled at the closed bathroom door. There was no answer. Balazar opened the left front drawer of his desk and took out the gun. This was no Colt Cobra, cozy enough to fit in a clamshell holster. It was a .357 Magnum.
Chimi, he shouted, I want you.
He slammed the drawer. The tower of cards fell with a soft, sighing thump. Balazar didn't even notice. Chimi Dretto, all 250 pounds of him, filled the doorway. He saw that the boss had pulled his gun out of the drawer, and Chimi immediately pulled his own from beneath a plaid jacket so loud it could have caused flash burns on anyone who made the mistake of looking at it too long.
I want Claudio and Trix, he said. Get him quick. The kid is up to something.
We got a problem, Chimi said.
Balazar's eyes flicked from the bathroom door to Chimi.
Oh, I got plenty of those already, he said. What's this new one, Chimi?
Chimi licked his lips. He didn't like telling the boss bad news even under the best of circumstances. When he looked like this...
Well, he said, and licked his lips.
You see, will you hurry the fuck up? Balazar yelled.
19. The sandalwood grips of the revolver were so smooth that Eddie's first act upon receiving it was to nearly drop it on his toes. The thing was so big it looked prehistoric, so heavy he knew he would have to lift it two-handed. The recoil, he thought, is apt to drive me right through the nearest wall. That's if it fires at all. Yet there was some part of him that wanted to hold it, that responded to its perfectly expressed purpose, that sensed its dim and bloody history and wanted to be part of it. No one but the best ever held this baby in his hand, Eddie thought. Until now, at least.
Are you ready? Roland asked.
No, but let's do it, Eddie said.
He gripped Roland's left wrist with his left hand. Roland slid his hot right arm around Eddie's bare shoulders. Together they stepped back through the doorway, from the windy darkness of the beach in Roland's dying world to the cool, fluorescent glare of Balazar's private bathroom in the Leaning Tower. Eddie blinked, adjusting his eyes to the light, and heard Chimi Dretto in the other room.
We got a problem, Chimi was saying.
Don't we all, Eddie thought. And then his eyes riveted on Balazar's medicine chest. It was standing open.
In his mind, he heard Balazar telling Jack to search the bathroom, and heard Andolini asking if there was any place in there he would know about. Balazar had paused before replying.
There is a small panel on the back wall of the medicine cabinet, he had said. I keep a few personal things in there.
Andolini had slid the metal panel open, but had neglected to close it.
Roland, he hissed.
Roland raised his own gun and pressed the barrel against his lips in a shushing gesture. Eddie crossed silently to the medicine chest.
A few personal things. There was a bottle of suppositories, a copy of a blearily printed magazine called Child's Play, the cover depicting two naked girls of about 8 engaged in a soul kiss, and 8 or 10 sample packages of Keflex. Eddie knew what Keflex was. Junkies, prone as they were to infections, both general and local, usually knew. Keflex was an antibiotic.
Oh, I got plenty of those already, Balazar was saying. He sounded harried. What's this new one, Chimi?
If this doesn't knock out whatever's wrong with him, nothing will, Eddie thought.
He began to grab the packages and went to stuff them into his pockets. He realized he had no pockets and uttered a harsh bark that wasn't even close to laughter. He began to dump them into the sink. He would have to pick them up later, if there was a later.
Well, Chimi was saying,
you see, will you hurry the fuck up? Balazar yelled.
It's the kid's big brother, Chimi said.
And Eddie froze with the last two packages of Keflex still in his hand, his head cocked. He looked more like the dog on the old RCA Victor records than ever.
What about him? Balazar asked impatiently.
He's dead, Chimi said.
Eddie dropped the Keflex into the sink and turned toward Roland.
They killed my brother, he said.
20. Balazar opened his mouth to tell Chimi not to bother him with a bunch of crap when he had important things to worry about, like this impossible-to-shake feeling that the kid was going to fuck him, Andolini or no Andolini, when he heard the kid, as clearly as the kid had no doubt heard him and Chimi.
They killed my brother, the kid said.
Suddenly Balazar didn't care about his goods, about the unanswered questions, or anything except bringing this situation to a screeching halt before it could get any weirder.
Kill him, Jack! He shouted. There was no response. Then he heard the kid say it again. They killed my brother. They killed Henry.
Balazar suddenly knew it wasn't Jack the kid was talking to.
Get all the gentlemen, he said to Jimmy. All of them. We're going to burn his ass, and when he's dead, we're going to take him in the kitchen, and I'm going to personally chop his head off.
21.
They killed my brother, the prisoner said.
The gunslinger said nothing. He only watched and thought, the bottles in the sink. That's what I need. What he thinks I need. The packets. Don't forget. Don't forget. From the other room, kill him, Jack! Neither Eddie nor the gunslinger took any notice of this.
They killed my brother. They killed Henry.
In the other room, Balazar was now talking about taking Eddie's head as a trophy. The gunslinger found some odd comfort in this. Not everything in this world was different from his own, it seemed. The one called Chimi began shouting hoarsely for the others. There was an ungentlemanly thunder of running feet. Do you want to do something about it, or do you just want to stand here? Roland asked.
Oh, I want to do something about it, Eddie said, and raised the gunslinger's revolver.
Although only moments ago he had believed he would need both hands to do it, he found that he could do it easily.
And what is it you want to do? Roland asked, and his voice seemed distant to his own ears.
He was sick, full of fever, but what was happening to him now was the onset of a different fever, one which was all too familiar. It was the fever that had overtaken him in Tull. It was battle fire, hazing all thought, leaving only the need to stop thinking and start shooting.
I want to go to war, Eddie Dean said calmly.
You don't know what you're talking about, Roland said. But you are going to find out. When we go through the door, you go right. I have to go left. My hand. Eddie nodded. They went to their war.
22.
Balazar had expected Eddie or Andolini or both of them. He had not expected Eddie and an utter stranger, a tall man with dirty gray-black hair and a face that looked as if it had been chiseled from obdurate stone by some savage god. For a moment he was not sure which way to fire. Chimi, however, had no such problems. The boss was mad at Eddie. Therefore he would punch Eddie's clock first and worry about the other cazzotto later. Chimi turned ponderously toward Eddie and pulled the trigger of his automatic three times. The casings jumped and gleamed in the air. Eddie saw the big man turning and went into a mad slide along the floor, whizzing along like some kid in a disco contest. A kid so jived up he didn't realize he'd left his entire John Travolta outfit, underwear included, behind. He went with his wang wagging and his bare knees first heating and then scorching as the friction built up. Holes punched through plastic that was supposed to look like knotty pine just above him. Slivers of it rained down on his shoulders and into his hair.
Don't let me die naked and needing a fix, God, he prayed, knowing such a prayer was more than blasphemous, it was an absurdity. Still, he was unable to stop it. I'll die, but please, just let me have one more.
The revolver in the gunslinger's left hand crashed. On the open beach it had been loud. Over here it was deafening.
Oh, jeez!
Chimi Dretto screamed in a strangled, breathy voice. It was a wonder he could scream at all. His chest suddenly caved in, as if someone had swung a sledgehammer at a barrel. His white shirt began to turn red in patches, as if poppies were blooming on it.
Oh, jeez! Oh, jeez! Oh!
Claudio Andolini shoved him aside. Chimi fell with a thud. Two of the framed pictures on Balazar's wall crashed down. The one showing the boss presenting the Sportsman of the Year trophy to a grinning kid at a police athletic league banquet landed on Chimi's head. Shattered glass fell on his shoulders.
Oh, jeez,
he whispered in a fainting little voice, and blood began to bubble from his lips. Claudio was followed by Trix and one of the men who had been waiting in the storage room. Claudio had an automatic in each hand. The guy from the storage room had a Remington shotgun sawed off so short that it looked like a derringer with a case of the mumps. Trix Postino was carrying what he called the Wonderful Rambo machine. This was an M16 rapid-fire assault weapon.
"Where's my brother, you fucking needle freak?" Claudio screamed. "What did you do to Jack?"
He could not have been terribly interested in an answer because he began to fire with both weapons while he was still yelling. "I'm dead," Eddie thought, and then Roland fired again. Claudio Andolini was propelled backwards in a cloud of his own blood. The automatics flew from his hands and slid across Balazar's desk. They thumped to the carpet amid a flutter of playing cards. Most of Claudio's guts hit the wall a second before Claudio caught up with them.
"Get him!" Balazar was shrieking. "Get the spook! The kid ain't dangerous! He's nothing but a bare-ass junkie! Get the spook! Blow him away!"
He pulled the trigger on the .357 twice. The Magnum was almost as loud as Roland's revolver. It did not make neat holes in the wall against which Roland crouched. The slug smashed gaping wounds in the fake wood to either side of Roland's head. White light from the bathroom shone through the holes in ragged rays. Roland pulled the trigger of his revolver. Only a dry click. Misfire. "Eddie!" the gunslinger yelled, and Eddie raised his own gun and pulled the trigger. The crash was so loud that for a moment he thought the gun had blown up in his hand, as Jax had done. The recoil did not drive him back through the wall, but it did snap his arm up in a savage arc that jerked all the tendons under his arm. He saw part of Balazar's shoulder disintegrate into red spray, heard Balazar screech like a wounded cat, and yelled, "The junkie ain't dangerous! Was that what you said? Was that it, you numb fuck? You want to mess with me and my brother? I'll show you who's dangerous! I'll show you!" There was a boom, like a grenade, as the guy from the storage room fired the sod off. Eddie rolled as the blast tore 100 tiny holes in the walls and bathroom door. His naked skin was seared by shot in several places, and Eddie understood that if the guy had been closer, where the thing's pattern was tight, he would have been vaporized. "Hell, I'm dead anyway," he thought, watching as the guy from the storage room worked the Remington's jack, pumping in fresh cartridges, then laying it over his forearm. He was grinning. His teeth were very yellow. Eddie didn't think they'd been acquainted with a toothbrush in quite some time. "Christ, I'm going to get killed by some fuckhead with yellow teeth, and I don't even know his name," Eddie thought dimly. "At least I put one in Balazar. At least I did that much." He wondered if Roland had another shot. He couldn't remember. "I got him!" Trix Postino yelled cheerfully. "Give me a clear field, Dario!" And before the man named Dario could give him a clear field or anything else, Trix opened up with the wonderful Rambo machine. The heavy thunder of machine gun fire filled Balazar's office. The first result of this barrage was to save Eddie Dean's life. Dario had drawn a bead on him with the sod off, but before he could pull its double triggers, Trix cut him in half.
"Stop it, you idiot!"
Balazar screamed. But Trix either didn't hear, couldn't stop, or wouldn't stop. Lips pulled back from his teeth so that his spit-shining teeth were bared in a huge shark's grin, he raked the room from one end to the other, blowing two of the wall panels to dust, turning framed photographs into clouds of flying glass fragments, hammering the bathroom door off its hinges. The frosted glass of Balazar's shower stall exploded. The March of Dimes trophy Balazar had gotten the year before bonged like a bell as a slug drove through it. In the movies, people actually kill other people with handheld rapid-fire weapons. In real life, this rarely happens. If it does, it happens with the first four or five slugs fired, as the unfortunate Dario could have testified if he had ever been capable of testifying to anything again. After the first four or five, two things happen to a man, even a powerful one, trying to control such a weapon. The muzzle begins to rise, and the shooter himself begins to turn, either right or left, depending on which unfortunate shoulder he has decided to bludgeon with the weapon's recoil. In short, only a moron or a movie star would attempt the use of such a gun. It was like trying to shoot someone with a pneumatic drill. For a moment, Eddie was incapable of any action more constructive than staring at this perfect marvel of idiocy. Then he saw other men crowding through the door behind Trix and raised Roland's revolver.
"Got him!"
Trix was screaming, with the joyous hysteria of a man who has seen too many movies to be able to distinguish between what the script in his head says should be happening and what really is.
"Got him! I got him!
Eddie pulled the trigger and vaporized Trix from the eyebrows up. Judging from the man's behavior, that was not a great deal.
"Jesus Christ, when these things do shoot, they really blow holes in things," he thought.
There was a loud kablam from Eddie's left. Something tore a hot gouge in his underdeveloped left bicep. He saw Balazar pointing the mag at him from behind the corner of his card-littered desk. His shoulder was a dripping red mass. Eddie ducked as the Magnum crashed again. 23. Roland managed to get into a crouch, aimed at the first of the new men coming in through the door, and squeezed the trigger. He had rolled the cylinder, dumped the used loads and the duds onto the carpet, and had loaded this one fresh shell. He had done it with his teeth. Balazar had pinned Eddie down. If this one's a dud, I think we're both gone. It wasn't. The gun roared, recoiled in his hand, and Jimmy Haspio spun aside, the .45 he had been holding falling from his dying fingers. Roland saw the other man duck back, and then he was crawling through the splinters of wood and glass that littered the floor. He dropped his revolver back into its holster. The idea of reloading again with two of his right fingers missing was a joke. Eddie was doing well. The gunslinger measured just how well by the fact that he was fighting naked. That was hard for a man, sometimes impossible. The gunslinger grabbed one of the automatic pistols Claudio Andolini had dropped.
"What are the rest of you guys waiting for?" Balazar screamed. "Jesus, eat these guys!"
Big George Biondi and the other man from the supply room charged in through the door. The man from the supply room was bawling something in Italian. Roland crawled to the corner of the desk. Eddie rose, aiming toward the door and the charging men. "He knows Balazar's there, waiting, but he thinks he's the only one of us with a gun now," Roland thought. "Here is another one, ready to die for you, Roland. What great wrong did you ever do that you should inspire such terrible loyalty in so many?" Balazar rose, not seeing the gunslinger was now on his flank. Balazar was thinking of only one thing, finally putting an end to the goddamn junkie who had brought this ruin down on his head. "No," the gunslinger said. And Balazar looked around at him, surprise stamped on his features. "Fuck you," Balazar began, bringing the Magnum around. The gunslinger shot him 4 times with Claudio's automatic. It was a cheap little thing, not much better than a toy, and touching it made his hand feel dirty. But it was perhaps fitting to kill a despicable man with a despicable weapon. Enrico Balazar died with an expression of terminal surprise on what remained of his face. "Hi, George," Eddie said, and pulled the trigger of the gunslinger's revolver. That satisfying crash came again. "No duds in this baby," Eddie thought crazily. "I guess I must have gotten the good one." George got off one shot before Eddie's bullet drove him back into the screaming man, bowling him over like a 9-pin, but it went wild. An irrational but utterly persuasive feeling had come over him, a feeling that Roland's gun held some magical, talismanic power of protection. As long as he held it, he couldn't be hurt. Silence fell then, a silence in which Eddie could hear only the man under Big George moaning. When George landed on Rudy Vecchio, which was this unfortunate fellow's name, it fractured 3 of Vecchio's ribs, and the high ringing in his own ears. He wondered if he would ever hear right again. The shooting spree, which now seemed to be over, made the loudest rock concert Eddie had ever been to sound like a radio playing 2 blocks over by comparison. Balazar's office was no longer recognizable as a room of any kind. Its previous function had ceased to matter. Eddie looked around with the wide, wondering eyes of a very young man seeing something like this for the first time, but Roland knew the look, and the look was always the same. Whether it was an open field of battle where thousands had died by cannon, rifle, sword, and halberd, or a small room where 5 or 6 had shot each other, it was the same place, always the same place in the end. Another dead house, stinking of gunpowder and raw meat. The wall between the bathroom and the office was gone, except for a few struts. Broken glass twinkled everywhere. Ceiling panels that had been shredded by Trix Postino's gaudy but useless M16 fireworks display hung down like pieces of peeled skin. Eddie coughed dryly. Now he could hear other sounds, a babble of excited conversation, shouted voices outside the bar, and in the distance, the warble of sirens. "How many?" the gunslinger asked Eddie. "Can we have gotten all of them?" "Yes. I think I got something for you, Eddie," Kevin Blake said from the hallway. "I thought you might want it, like for a souvenir, you know?" What Balazar had not been able to do to the younger Dean brother, Kevin had done to the elder. He lobbed Henry Dean's severed head through the doorway. Eddie saw what it was and screamed. He ran toward the door, heedless of the splinters of glass and wood that punched into his bare feet, screaming, shooting, firing the last live shell in the big revolver as he went. "No, Eddie!" Roland screamed, but Eddie didn't hear. He was beyond hearing. He hit a dud in the sixth chamber, but by then he was aware of nothing but the fact that Henry was dead. Henry, they had cut off his head. Some miserable son of a bitch had cut off Henry's head, and that son of a bitch was going to pay. Oh, yes, you can count on that. So he ran toward the door, pulling the trigger again and again, unaware that nothing was happening, unaware that his feet were red with blood, and Kevin Blake stepped into the doorway to meet him, crouched low, a Lama 38 automatic in his hand. Kevin's red hair stood around his head in coils and springs, and Kevin was smiling. 24. He'll be low, the gunslinger thought, knowing he would have to be lucky to hit his target with this untrustworthy little toy, even if he had guessed right. When he saw the ruse of Balazar's soldier was going to draw Eddie out, Roland rose to his knees and steadied his left hand on his right fist, grimly ignoring the screech of pain making that fist caused. He would have one chance only. The pain didn't matter. Then the man with the red hair stepped into the doorway, smiling, and as always, Roland's brain was gone. His eyes saw, his hand shot, and suddenly the redhead was lying against the wall of the corridor with his eyes open and a small blue hole in his forehead. Eddie was standing over him, screaming and sobbing, dry-firing the big revolver with the sandalwood grips again and again, as if the man with the red hair could never be dead enough. The gunslinger waited for the deadly crossfire that would cut Eddie in half, and when it didn't come, he knew it was truly over. If there had been other soldiers, they had taken to their heels. He got wearily to his feet, reeled, and then walked slowly over to where Eddie Dean stood. "Stop it," he said. Eddie ignored him and went on dry-firing Roland's big gun at the dead man. "Stop it, Eddie. He's dead. They're all dead. Your feet are bleeding." Eddie ignored him and went on pulling the revolver's trigger. The babble of excited voices outside was closer. So were the sirens. The gunslinger reached for the gun and pulled on it. Eddie turned on him, and before Roland was entirely sure what was happening, Eddie struck him on the side of the head with his own gun. Roland felt a warm gush of blood and collapsed against the wall. He struggled to stay on his feet. They had to get out of here, quick. But he could feel himself sliding down the wall in spite of his every effort. And then the world was gone for a little while, in a drift of grayness. 25. He was out for no more than 2 minutes, and then he managed to get things back into focus and make it to his feet. Eddie was no longer in the hallway. Roland's gun lay on the chest of the dead man with the red hair. The gunslinger bent, fighting off a wave of dizziness, picked it up, and dropped it into its holster with an awkward cross-body movement. "I want my damned fingers back," he thought tiredly, and sighed. He tried to walk back into the ruins of the office, but the best he could manage was an educated stagger. He stopped, bent, and picked up all of Eddie's clothes that he could hold in the crook of his left arm. The howlers had almost arrived. Roland believed the men winding them were probably militia, a marshal's posse, something of that sort, but there was always the possibility they might be more of Balazar's men. "Eddie," he croaked. His throat was sore and throbbing again, worse even than the swollen place on the side of his head where Eddie had struck him with the revolver. Eddie didn't notice. Eddie was sitting on the floor with his brother's head cradled against his belly. He was shuddering all over and crying. The gunslinger looked for the door, didn't see it, and felt a nasty jolt that was nearly terror. Then he remembered. With both of them on this side, the only way to create the door was for him to make physical contact with Eddie. He reached for him, but Eddie shrank away, still weeping. "Don't touch me," he said. "Eddie, it's over. They're all dead, and your brother's dead, too." "Leave my brother out of this!" Eddie shrieked childishly, and another fit of shuddering went through him. He cradled the severed head to his chest and rocked it. He lifted his streaming eyes to the gunslinger's face.
"All the times he took care of me, man," he said, sobbing so hard the gunslinger could barely understand him. "All the times. Why couldn't I have taken care of him just this once, after all the times he took care of me?"
"He took care of you, all right," Roland thought grimly. "Look at you, sitting there and shaking like a man who's eaten an apple from the fever tree. He took care of you just fine." "We have to go."
"Go?"
For the first time, some vague understanding came into Eddie's face, and it was followed immediately by alarm.
"I ain't going nowhere, especially not back to that other place where those big crabs or whatever they are ate Jack."
Someone was hammering on the door, yelling to open up. "Do you want to stay here and explain all these bodies?" the gunslinger asked.
"I don't care," Eddie said. "Without Henry, it doesn't matter. Nothing does."
"Maybe it doesn't matter to you," Roland said, "but there are others involved, prisoner."
"Don't call me that," Eddie shouted. "I'll call you that until you show me you can walk out of the cell you're in,"
Roland shouted back. It hurt his throat to yell, but he yelled just the same.
"Throw that rotten piece of meat away and stop puling."
Eddie looked at him, cheeks wet, eyes wide and frightened. "This is your last chance," an amplified voice said from outside. To Eddie, the voice sounded eerily like the voice of a game show host. "The SWAT squad has arrived. I repeat, the SWAT squad has arrived."
"What's on the other side of that door for me?"
Eddie asked the gunslinger quietly. "Go on and tell me. If you can tell me, maybe I'll come. But if you lie, I'll know." "Probably death," the gunslinger said. "But before that happens, I don't think you'll be bored. I want you to join me on a quest. Of course, all will probably end in death, death for the four of us in a strange place. But if we should win through..." His eyes gleamed. "If we win through, Eddie, you'll see something beyond all the beliefs of all your dreams."
"What thing?"
"The Dark Tower."
"Where is this tower?"
"Far from the beach where you found me. How far, I know not."
"What is it?"
"I don't know that either. Except that it may be a kind of a bolt. A central linchpin that holds all of existence together. All existence, all time, and all size."
"You said four. Who are the other two?"
"I know them not, for they have yet to be drawn."
"As I was drawn, or as you'd like to draw me?"
"Yes." From outside, there was a coughing explosion like a mortar round. The glass of the Leaning Tower's front window blew in. The barroom began to fill with choking clouds of tear gas.
"Well?" Roland asked.
He could grab Eddie, force the doorway into existence by their contact, and pummel them both through. But he had seen Eddie risk his life for him. He had seen this hag-ridden man behave with all the dignity of a born gunslinger, in spite of his addiction and the fact that he had been forced to fight as naked as the day he was born. And he wanted Eddie to decide for himself.
"Quests, adventures, towers, worlds to win," Eddie said and smiled wanly.
Neither of them turned as fresh tear gas rounds flew through the windows to explode hissing on the floor. The first acrid tendrils of the gas were now slipping into Balazar's office.
"Sounds better than one of those Edgar Rice Burroughs books about Mars Henry used to read me sometimes when we were kids. You only left out one thing."
"What's that?"
"The beautiful bare-breasted girls."
The gunslinger smiled. "On the way to the Dark Tower," he said, "anything is possible." Another shudder racked Eddie's body. He raised Henry's head, kissed one cool, ash-colored cheek, and laid the gore-streaked relic gently aside. He got to his feet.
"Okay," he said. "I didn't have anything else planned for tonight anyway."
"Take these," Roland said, and shoved the clothes at him. "Put on your shoes, if nothing else. You've cut your feet." On the sidewalk outside, two cops wearing plexiglass faceplates, flak jackets, and Kevlar vests smashed in the Leaning Tower's front door. In the bathroom, Eddie, dressed in his underpants, his Adidas sneakers, and nothing else, handed the sample packages of Keflex to Roland one by one, and Roland put them into the pockets of Eddie's jeans. When they were all safely stowed, Roland slid his right arm around Eddie's neck again, and Eddie gripped Roland's left hand again. The door was suddenly there, a rectangle of darkness. Eddie felt the wind from that other world blow his sweaty hair back from his forehead. He heard the waves rolling up that stony beach. He smelled the tang of sour sea salt. And in spite of everything, all his pain and sorrow, he suddenly wanted to see this tower of which Roland spoke. He wanted to see it very much. And with Henry dead, what was there in this world for him? Their parents were dead, and there hadn't been a steady girl since he got heavily into the smack 3 years ago. Just a steady parade of sluts, needlers, and nosers, none of them straight. Fuck that action. They stepped through, Eddie actually leading a little. On the other side, he was suddenly racked with fresh shudders and agonizing muscle cramps, the first symptoms of serious heroin withdrawal. And with them, he also had the first alarmed second thoughts.
Wait! He shouted. I want to go back for a minute. His desk, or the other office, the skag. If they were keeping Henry dope, there's got to be junk. Heroin. I need it.
He looked pleadingly at Roland, but the gunslinger's face was stony. That part of your life is over, Eddie, he said. He reached out with his left hand.
No!
Eddie screamed, clawing at him.
No, you don't get it, man! I need it!
He might as well have been clawing stone. The gunslinger swept the door shut. It made a dull clapping sound that bespoke utter finality and fell backward onto the sand. A little dust puffed up from its edges. There was nothing behind the door, and now no word written upon it. This particular portal between the worlds had closed forever.
No!
Eddie screamed, and the gulls screamed back at him as if in jeering contempt. The lobstrosities asked him questions, perhaps suggesting he could hear them a little better if he were to come a little closer, and Eddie fell over on his side, crying and shuddering and jerking with cramps.
Your need will pass, the gunslinger said,
and managed to get one of the sample packets out of the pocket of Eddie's jeans, which were so like his own. Again, he could read some of these letters, but not all. Chieflet, the word looked like. Chieflet. Medicine from that other world.
Kill or cure, Roland murmured, and dry swallowed two of the capsules.
Then he took the other three Astin and lay next to Eddie, and took him in his arms as well as he could. And after some difficult time, both of them slept.